my chance with crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make heaven in the middle of it. Rest make heaven in the middle. We are rest make heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off with an interview done with David Icke. And he explains what this virus, this COVID-19, is about from a mind manipulation and a conditioning way. But anyway, it's an excellent, we're going to have a short clip, and then we're going to follow that with some other clips. We're going to have Tucker Carlson explain through Victor David Hansen what they think about some of the first speakers of the DNC convention and so forth. And then we're going to move on to some other very interesting things. And the Millie Weaver controversy rages on and on. We're going to have a Caitlin Bennett clip there of what she thinks it's all about. So here we go with this David Icke interview.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the David Icke Dot Connector videocast. It's the 14th of August, and that is answer release date. Happy book release date, Dad.
Yeah, it's it's shipping today, all over the world. Anyone that gets the book from America, Canada, or in America and Canada, well, it's shipped from within America, so they'll get it pretty quick. And it's gone down very well because the answer to the current situation is in there. The only question is, do we do what is necessary to make the answer real?
I'm hopeful at the moment, Dad. Having been sort of travelling around doing some filming over the last few days, I travelled around London, went on a tube, didn't get hassled, didn't get any grief. So I'm hopeful that people are starting to kind of see through things. You know, the UK government's knocking thousands of deaths off. Oh yeah, we got them wrong. The CDC in America said today, shared a story on davidicke.com, where, oh yeah, we got those figures wrong. It's amazing how you can just kill thousands of people accidentally on a death certificate.
Yeah, and the truth, of course, is that the extraordinary manipulation of the figures has forced them, as more and more people become aware of it. I mean, I've been going on about it for months and months since all this started, that they're having to give a bit. They don't want to, because they want those figures to stay as high as possible, because it's all about fear and control. They're having to give a bit. The truth is, however, I would most strongly suggest, is that to give a bit to the extent that is necessary, then those figures have to be reduced to zero, because no one has died from COVID-19. And if the truth were told, the scale of this scam is simply almost incomprehensible. Again, the Nazi approach of the bigger the lie, the more they will believe it. But more and more people aren't believing it. You're absolutely right. And I think you are talking on Saturday at a protest in Birmingham, right?
Yes, I'm talking, I've got the information in front of me, Victoria Square, Birmingham, from 12 p.m. tomorrow. So I've not done a lot of public speaking, and they've got some doctors and some experts and stuff, and then I think they just basically wanted a gobshite at the end to sort of try and roll everyone up, and I'm absolutely honoured to do that job. I always had a big gob, as you know, Dad. I mean,
well, a big gob is actually far more far more powerful than no God. And the theme I want to talk about today is a mind virus, because COVID-19 is a mind virus. It's not a physical virus. It's not a physical pathogen. It's a pathogen of the mind. It is a global belief system, a global unquestioning belief system that has turned billions of people into nothing more than software programs. And in the books over the decades, I've talked about this mind virus, which I say infiltrates the minds of people who fall into its frequency. And what is its frequency? It's the frequency that resonates to fear, to anxiety, to hatred, to resentment, all these low vibrational emotions, particularly fear, because they're all expressions of fear, really. And if you can be pulled into this frequency band of fear, this mind virus, this deeply imbalanced frequency of consciousness, if you like, can attach to you. And if it attaches to you, and the way it does it is through the subconscious, if you become aware of this mind virus and its influence upon you disappears. So it hides in the subconscious. And you know, according to psychological studies, something like 95% of human behavior, response, reaction, comes from the subconscious, not the conscious mind. I go into this in the books in detail, not least the answer. And so we are being driven by our subconscious, while the conscious mind thinks it's driving the car. And I've been very interested to read in the last couple of weeks the concept, the Native American concept of something known as Wetiko, and how they talk about a mind blindness that attaches to the human subconscious mind and convinces the conscious mind that it's not blind, even though this virus has made it blind. And if you look at what we're seeing all around us now, the Wetiko phenomenon is absolutely in our face, where you have people who are convinced that they have consciously worked out what this virus phenomenon is all about. I've thought about it, and you know, this is what I think is going on. And what comes out of their mouth, Gaz, is the official story, word for word. So they think they are free thinking, working it out, when actually, as the Native American concept goes, the mind blindness imposed upon the conscious mind has convinced the conscious mind it's not blind. So basically, it's a wonderful case, a consciousness case of the blind leading the blind while the blind thinks it can see. This is what COVID-19 really is. It's a virus of the mind. And when I say virus, I don't mean like physical virus. I mean like a computer virus. I'll give you an example of what I mean, because I've studied this now for a long, long time, which is why I was so taken by realizing that the Native Americans have this same concept coming from a different using different words and different symbolism. But in the books over the years, I've used this analogy of a computer, and the computer is symbolic of the conscious mind, the five sense mind, as I call it. And sitting at the keyboard with the mouse is the guy who's working the computer, which is symbolic of expanded levels of consciousness. Because what this virus seeks to do via the subconscious is to get into that space between the conscious mind and the subconscious mind and disconnect the conscious mind from its expanded levels of consciousness. So basically it's isolating the conscious mind in what I call the bubble. And what happens is that the bubble is created by this isolation, and then that isolated consciousness is fed all day, every day, with the official version of reality. Now, without expanded levels of consciousness, where you take this information and you process it and you question it, and you you see if it makes sense, because you've got other levels of awareness that are looking at this from different angles. Instead of that, you only have one angle. You have no other way of questioning or seeing the information from another perspective, because you only get the official narrative. And because you've done no research and you've done no questioning, you have no other point of observation to question that information. So people just accept it overwhelmingly in the absence of any other explanation. It's just one. The government's, the official authority explanation. And what we call awakening is breaking the impact of that mind virus so that you can start to free think beyond this isolated five sense bubbles. So you have the computer, symbolic of the conscious mind. You have the guy on the keyboard and the mouse, symbolic of expanded levels of consciousness. And those two are supposed to interact. But what this mind virus seeks to do, Wetiko, is to get in that connection and block it off. And so think of what happens with a computer virus. First of all, your instructions, your communication through the mouse and the keyboard stop being adhered to, stop being followed. And as the virus gets more and more hold of the computer, you're banging the keys and you're banging the mouse, but the computer is no longer responding. What it's responding to is the virus, the information virus, that has taken it over. Now the virus is deciding and dictating what the computer does and where the computer goes, while the person with the keyboard and the mouse, symbolic of expanded levels of consciousness, can't make that connection. And that's how this virus, this mind virus works. And to have studied this and to have written about it so long ago now in the books, and then to come across this Native American concept, which is just saying the same, is very interesting to me and very compelling. And funnily enough, as you know, there's been a very good article on davidicke.com this week, as from Off Guardian, who do some tremendous stuff. And it's by a guy called C.J. Hopkins, who's an American playwright and, you know, a writer in general living in Germany. And it's called Invasion of the New Normals. Now, what he's doing is talking about the takeover of the mind of what he calls the new normals. These are the people that are not only accepting the official story of the, quote, virus, but seeking to impose the will of authority upon people that are questioning it. What he's describing with this situation in the current events, what he's describing is Wetiko. He's describing the mind virus. He doesn't use that language, but he's describing that. And you know, lots of people are starting to observe this now. And although they use different language and different symbols, they're actually describing the same phenomena. Give you just a few things from this article. It's on davidicke.com. Very well worth reading the whole thing. People's minds are being taken over by a much more destructive and less otherworldly force. force that transforms them overnight into aggressively paranoid, order-following, propaganda-parroting totalitarians. This is the mind virus I've been writing about for decades. You know the people I'm talking about. Some of them are probably your friends and family, people you have known for years, and who have always seemingly been completely rational, but who are now convinced that we need to radically alter the fabric of human society to protect ourselves from a virus that causes mild to moderate flu-like symptoms, or absolutely no symptoms at all, even if you believe there is a virus. Of course I don't, in over 95% of those infected, and that over 99.6% survive, which goes without saying, is totally insane.
See, it's a system that we exist in. It's a field system. And in this system, we're collecting up a series of not only audio sounds, but visual sounds. I mean, visual, you know, could say graphics, you know. And these things are overwhelming in persuading us in certain ways and forms and ways. And it's like a sorcery system of sorcery. Anyway, Ike has a new book out. Go ahead and buy that book. And he's really insightful person. Now, moving on, we're going to feature a clip next of Tucker Carlson. And he interviewed Victor Davis Hansen, and he is a marvelous person and can really give us insights into some of this overall problems. And Tucker's not very complimentary about what this Democrats were doing at the convention. But here we go with that clip now.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson tonight. Big news, day two of the Democratic National Convention will start shortly. Tonight, former President Bill Clinton, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Sandy, will speak. That ought to be worth watching. We'll have live coverage of all of it throughout the night right here on Fox News. But it turns out there are only two kinds of people in the world, those who enjoy mandatory corporate diversity seminars and those who don't. If you find yourself in the former category, you must have loved last night's Democratic convention, the preachy self-righteousness, the condescension, the shameless lying, the strange mixture of guilt and aggression. It probably all felt refreshingly familiar to you. For everyone else, though, it was a massive turnoff. The whole thing seemed like the weirdest infomercial ever made. At one point, they dragged out grouchy old John Kasich, a man with the charm of a high school science teacher, to try to sell you things. No thanks. Who would buy that? If the DNC was in direct marketing, they would be bankrupt by now. But the weirdest moment by far of the night was Andrew Cuomo's speech. Cuomo was the brother of CNN's weightlifting correspondent and is also the sitting governor of New York, which is the second biggest Democratic state. His father famously gave the DNC keynote back in 1984. So there was never any question that Andrew Cuomo was going to speak at this year's convention. What we did not expect in a million years was Andrew Cuomo to talk about the coronavirus. You'd think that would be the last thing, the very last thing Cuomo would want to talk about, that and the fact that his top aide is now doing 6 years in prison for bribery. But coronavirus especially. Whatever you think of Andrew Cuomo, and he's a good talker, you can't say he's done a good job with the pandemic. Citizens of New York State have been four times as likely to die as other Americans from the coronavirus. And there's a reason for that. Andrew Cuomo forced corona-infected patients into nursing homes. Many thousands perished as a result of that decision. It is possible that no leader on earth mishandled the coronavirus outbreak as profoundly as Andrew Cuomo did. A man with integrity would have resigned immediately. Cuomo refused to do that. Now he brags about it, literally. Last night, Cuomo told the audience what a great job he did managing the coronavirus. Nobody laughed at him. They applauded, like they agreed. The whole thing was like watching Jeffrey Epstein boast about his internship program. You could barely believe it was happening. But it was. Here's part of it.
New Yorkers were ground zero for the COVID virus and have gone from one of the highest infection rates on the globe to one of the lowest. We climbed the impossible mountain, and right now we are on the other side. Our nation is in crisis. And in many ways, COVID is just a metaphor. A virus attacks when the body is weak and when it cannot defend itself. The European virus infected the Northeast while the White House was still fixated on China. As they proved their way failed, we proved that our way succeeded. And for all the pain and all the tears, our way worked. And it was beautiful.
The European virus? Huh? Oh, right. The deadly pathogen that escaped from a lab in Luxembourg last winter. Those damn Europeans. Always infecting us with their diseases. If only they would stop eating bats. What world is this? It's a world of such pure dishonesty that all reference points have disappeared from sight. There are no facts left, only assertions. Andrew Cuomo says the way he handled the coronavirus was, quote, beautiful. And so it was. Cuomo declared it. It's now reality. This is a very specific style of political rhetoric. It's a departure from what we had before. Politicians used to try to convince you of things. The assumption was you were in charge. You were the voter, which is to say, you were the boss. If they wanted a job, they had to win you over. It turned out to be a cumbersome process, so they've abandoned it now. Now they just browbeat you into accepting their program. If you don't like their program, it's your fault. You're the bad guy. You're immoral. Michelle Obama could teach a master's class in this mode of communication. Last night, she delivered a taped address from her $11 million estate on Martha's Vineyard. Michelle Obama, it's fair to say, has done pretty well for herself. But what she wanted you to know last night was that she is still a victim, she and everyone who looks like her. So shut up and accept her dominion over you. Watch.
And here at home, as George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and a never-ending list of innocent people of color continue to be murdered, stating the simple fact that a Black life matters is still met with derision from the nation's highest office.
Now, we don't want to be too harsh about this. We're not lawyers, but we understand the constitutional limits of the First Amendment in this country is now defined. No shouting fire in a crowded theater, no criticizing Michelle Obama. We know that. So we're going to say this as gently as possible, meaning absolutely no disrespect and, of course, being certain to pronounce everyone's name correctly. But what you just heard was a total and complete crock. A never-ending list of innocent people of color continued to be murdered? That's what Michelle Obama told us. Well, no. So far this year, there have been a total of 8 unarmed Black men killed by police in this country. Not a never-ending list, 8. Last year, there was a total of 14. So what Michelle Obama just told you is a total lie, a calculated lie, a lie designed to make America more fearful, more angry, more divided, and thereby help her candidate win. That's what Michelle Obama just did. But pretty much no one pointed out last night they were too afraid to. Because as Michelle Obama made very clear, if you disagree with what she says, you are a bigot.
Donald Trump is the wrong president for our country. He has had more than enough time to prove that he can do the job, but he is clearly in over his head. Now, I understand that my message won't be heard by some people. We live in a nation that is deeply divided, and I am a Black woman speaking at the Democratic Convention. But enough of you know me by now. You know that I tell you exactly what I'm feeling. You know I hate politics. But you also know that I care about this nation.
I understand that my message won't be heard by some people, Michelle Obama declared. Why won't they hear her message? Well, because they're bad people. That's why. Half the country is evil. They hate me for my race, says the woman whose husband was elected by that very same country twice in a row, hence allowing her to buy an $11 million spread on Martha's Vineyard from which she lectures the plebs. And by the way, if Michelle Obama, quote, hates politics so much, why is she giving a political speech at a political convention? Isn't there anything else to do on Martha's Vineyard in the summer? You'd think someone on television might have asked that. It's a pretty obvious question. But no, Michelle Obama was talking, so they were too thrilled to think clearly.
Michelle Obama is riveting, was riveting, one of the best speeches I've heard her give, and I've heard her give many speeches.
It's not only that she was emotional and a mother and seemed to be a truth teller.
She is clearly one of the most talented political minds of our time right now.
She's also this kind of pop culture figure who also kind of comes across as your favorite next door neighbor.
She doesn't come across as a politician. She comes across as a mother and patriot.
She wasn't just putting the president down. She was trying to pick the country up.
It was all tied together in a beautiful bow by Michelle Obama.
She delivered epic shade.
As Nicole just said, it was epic shade, but it was elegant shade.
I mean, just extraordinary speech. I mean, she's beautiful.
A mother, a patriot, a truth teller, beautiful. Adjective after adjective piling up like tailings outside of mine. It was sad to see someone like Andrew Yang trapped on one of those all-moron panels, faithfully mouthing the words. Yang is actually a very smart guy and a good guy. His friends must be embarrassed for him. The rest of them, though, really mean it. You probably still think of the left as secular, but not anymore. They are fervent religious fanatics. Michelle Obama is their L. Ron Hubbard. Everything she does is good by definition. She's the most beautiful, the smartest, the wisest. If Michelle Obama played golf, she would shoot an 18 every time. In the words of Van Jones, her speech last night was extraordinary. Even though, as you know if you saw it, it was exactly the opposite of that. The speech was ordinary. It was totally pedestrian, like almost everything Michelle Obama says. But you can't admit that. You've got to pretend that she's Aristotle. That's the law. What was legitimately extraordinary last night was the entertainment the DNC provided. Most of the networks didn't show that. They cut away after Michelle Obama finished speaking. They couldn't wait to start slobbering over her. But the cameras did keep rolling, and the few who stuck around were treated to this. What the hell was that? And how is it going to improve my life? You may have wondered that if you saw it, but the DNC gave you no hint because improving your life isn't the point. It never is. The point of that performance was the BLM signs in the background. They were there to remind you that you have done something very wrong and have no right to resist. Be quiet and accept what we give you. You have no choice. You're guilty. Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser arrived to underscore that point. Bowser City is falling apart right now, literally. Been there? For centuries, Washington, D.C. was a beautiful place. You may remember it from your sixth grade trip there. Parks and trees and open spaces, low buildings, a city the country was proud of. Now its open spaces are lined with tents, and inside them drug-addicted vagrants live, and they emerge periodically to scare and harass visitors and local residents, including in hotel lobbies. It's out of control. Under the leadership of Muriel Bowser, people who pay taxes in Washington are fleeing the city in huge numbers. But that's okay with the Democratic National Committee because Muriel Bowser is on their team. She may have wrecked our nation's capital, a city she did not build, but she got the politics right, and that's all that matters.
So I created Black Lives Matter Plaza right behind me as a place where we could come together to say enough. Because we can't just paint those words behind me. We can't just say those words. We have to live those words.
Yeah, she's living those words. Meanwhile, your unemployment benefits expire. The restaurant you work at has disappeared forever. At least you can go to sleep in your car knowing that far away in a city run by corrupt bureaucrats, a street now has a fashionable political slogan painted across it. That is the message, not just of Muriel Bowser, but of the Democratic Party. They're going with it. That's what they're running on. And that message was consistent throughout last night. At one point, Bernie Sanders arrived to remind you that the one thing you really care about, way more than your kids going back to school or going broke, is getting rid of cash bail for accused criminals. That's what's important. Watch.
To help reform our broken criminal justice system, Joe will end private prisons and detention centers, cash bail, and the school-to-prison pipeline. And to heal the soul of our nation, Joe Biden will end the hate and division Trump has created.
How out of touch would you have to be? How many years would you have to have spent in the United States Senate to believe that ending cash bail would, quote, heal the soul of our nation? That's not a real position that an actual human being would take or say out loud. But that's fine for Bernie Sanders because it turns out he doesn't take real positions anyway. Here he is on CNN over the weekend. He was asked about how he feels about a Wall Street favorite, Kamala Harris, being effectively the next president under Joe Biden. Here's how he responded.
This Wall Street Journal headline says, as Kamala Harris joins Biden ticket, Wall Street sighs in relief. If Wall Street breathes the sigh of relief with Kamala Harris being named to the ticket, what does Bernie Sanders do?
Well, Bernie Sanders does everything that he can to defeat Donald Trump, who is undermining American democracy. Donald Trump was lied to the American people repeatedly on every issue. So what Bernie Sanders is going to do is do everything that I can to defeat Donald Trump, to elect Joe Biden.
It's just an amazing exchange that lays bare what's really going on. Bernie Sanders, who at the very least you thought was sincere, Bernie Sanders, who spent his entire career attacking Wall Street, is asked a really simple question. How do you feel about a craven, soulless puppet of Wall Street potentially running the country in like 3 months? He can't answer the question. This is the Democratic Party in 2020. They don't believe anything, not one thing, and they're not embarrassed about it. Tonight at the convention, for example, they're featuring a major address by Bill Clinton, and they're doing it on the very same day that a new picture emerged showing Bill Clinton getting a massage from a victim of Jeffrey Epstein's. But pay no attention to that, because Amy Klobuchar is here with some stale jokes, so be sure to tip your waitresses. Sorry, your servers.
You know, the president may hate the post office, but he's still going to have to send them a change of address card come January.
Feel your soul being crushed yet? Have you watched long enough? It's like the final scene in Das Boot. The walls are caving inward. You're covered in sweat. You feel like a trapped animal desperate to escape. But there is nowhere to go. The mandatory corporate diversity seminar has just begun. Victor Davis Hanson is a senior fellow at the Hoover Institute and a very smart man. We're always grateful to have him on the show. Professor, thanks for coming on. What is the message that the Democratic Party is trying to sell to the country right now?
Well, I think the common themes that you outlined, Tucker, are one, they say these things that aren't true, whether it's Michelle Obama talking about black lives being indiscriminately almost daily killed on the street, or Andrew Cuomo with the worst record about the virus and then bragging as if it was the best, because there is no media as we used to know it. NBC, ABC, the network news, CNN, MSNBC, TBS, NPR, they fuse with the progressive movement in general and the Democratic Party in particular. So when he says this, he knows nobody's going to challenge him, so that only emboldens him. Second theme was all of these people have one thing in common, Tucker. They're never subject to the consequences of their ideology. It's easy for Bernie Sanders to say he's for no bail because he has three homes. They're not going to people aren't going to show up, criminals, hijack him when he walks out of his lakeside estate. And Michelle Obama knows that there were over 100 people killed in 1 month alone in her hometown in Chicago. They weren't killed by white people. They weren't killed by the police. There's been over 400. She knows that. She knows, as you said, there were 9 killed last year by the police and 8 African-Americans perhaps this year. She knows what the real problem is. But she also knows that she could go to Chicago with Barack. She doesn't like politics. Meet with community leaders and say, we have a crisis in Chicago and in general and among the African-American community. She doesn't like politics. It would be a wonderful thing to do to stop that, what's really an urban genocide. But, you know, it's very easy to say something from your Washington or Martha Vineyard estate, $20 million of estate and mansions, because you're never going to be subject to the ramifications. Black Lives Matter is not going to show up outside of her mansion, and there's not going to be an inner city shooting match right outside Martha's Vineyard. So these all become abstractions that you come on and say you really don't want to do this. And finally, when I'm getting back to the media, when she says we go high when they go low, she's talking right now when her husband's administration has weaponized the IRS, the FBI, the DOJ, the CIA, and is the subject of a massive investigation by a federal attorney. And it would probably end up, if things happen as many predict, as one of the most corrupt administrations that tried to destroy a political campaign, a presidential transition, and a presidency. And she's saying that they go low and she goes high. And again, she can say all of that because of the clips that you played. Those clips you played were not from journalists, Tucker. They were from activists that say they're journalists, but they're really part of the progressive agenda and movement.
It's completely distressing. I don't think I've heard it as nicely summed up as that. Professor, I appreciate your coming on tonight. Thank you for that.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I tell you what, that Victor Davis Hanson, quite an insightful person. Well, coming up next, there was a good interview that Roger had with Alex Jones. Roger Stone and Alex Jones were interviewed, and together, I mean, Alex was interviewing Roger Stone, let me get this straight, and then they expand that about what's really going on from a lot of different angles. Here's that interview, very insightful. This interview starts off with the recent arrest of Steve Bannon for misuse of the alleged misuse of some funds that they were raising to build parts of the wall on the border. But here we go now, and boy, let Roger Stone and Alex really lay it out. Here we go next.
Yeah, I think the overriding desire here is to undermine the president. But the truth is, despite the fact that Bannon keeps planting these stories that he's been rehabilitated in the White House and that he's counseling people at the White House are essentially not true, or he may be speaking to people at the White House, but that doesn't mean he has any influence with the president. Let's remember, Steve Bannon referred to the Trump Real Estate Company as a organized crime organization. He called Donald Trump Jr., who is a great patriot, a traitor. He accused him of treason, to be more specific. I don't know why anybody would want this guy back in the tent. He is really not to be trusted. And frankly, stealing $1 million, which is what the indictment accuses him of, is far more serious than the charges fabricated and brought against me of lying to Congress when I meant any misstatement I meant was immaterial. And I had no intent to mislead anyone because there was nothing to mislead them about.
Well, Roger Stone joins us, and I appreciate him because he's a man in demand and very, very busy. I wanted to get his take on the Bannon situation. It's bigger than just Steve Bannon perjuring himself and saying Stone was a WikiLeaks connection. This ties into a bunch of things, and what's happening, he's got campaign news and a lot more. So, Roger Stone, thank you for coming on with us today.
Alex, thank you very much for having me. I must say at the top that I take no delight in Steve Bannon's new problems, but they don't surprise me because we know definitively that he directly contradicted his testimony at my trial, where he was Robert Mueller's top witness, his big secret witness, in his sworn testimony to the House Intelligence Committee. In fact, it was so egregious and so obvious, the New York Post reported on it. You can't have it both ways. He told the House Intelligence Committee that he never spoke to me about WikiLeaks or Julian Assange at any time ever. That is the truth, by the way. And then basically on the stand, sealing my guilty verdict, he said, no, we spoke about it in every conversation we had in 2016. Not true. So this does not surprise me. What does surprise me is that in my trial, the government had an obligation to tell us that Steve Bannon, their chief witness, was under federal investigation. Not doing so is a Brady violation. It's not that Bannon's federal investigation was exculpatory, but we could have used it to impeach his credibility. Did Steve try to make a deal on this criminal charge and throw me to the wolves in return? I'll never know. I'm praying for him at this point. I point out that the Ten Commandments tell us, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. And the Bible teaches us to pray for those who have trespassed against us.
And vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. And here he is groveling, lying, working with the system, leaking on Trump. And now the very people, as I'm told, I talked to high-level folks in New York yesterday morning. They said, no, this is the deep state. Democrats trying to embarrass Trump. So now the deep state's doing Trump a favor against this traitor. It just shows there's no honor amongst thieves.
Well, not only that, but I did learn that most of the most prominent neocons in the Trump administration, the most problematic ones, H.R. McMaster, Rex Tillerson, Rod Rosenstein, these people were sponsored, yes, by Steve Bannon. So he talks a great game as a nationalist, but he has been crucial in placing some of the neocons who did, I think, real damage to the Trump administration until the president got wise and got rid of them. So, look, I don't know how this unfolds. Remember, the Wall Street Journal has also reported that there are ongoing investigations into Bannon's relationship with a Chinese billionaire. I don't know what will come of any of that. I don't know if there's any wrongdoing there. But this, I think this story is to be continued.
This is a big deal that he groveled to the deep state, but still they burned him as a cheap trick against Trump that nobody's buying to try to discredit the wall or something. Can you speak to that briefly? And then let's shift gears into another subject I'll bring up in a moment.
Yeah, I think the overriding desire here is to undermine the president. But the truth is, despite the fact that Bannon keeps planting these stories that he's been rehabilitated in the White House and that he's counseling people at the White House are essentially not true, or he may be speaking to people at the White House, but that doesn't mean he has any influence with the president. Let's remember, Steve Bannon referred to the Trump Real Estate Company as a organized crime organization. He called Donald Trump Jr., who is a great patriot, a traitor. He accused him of treason, to be more specific. I don't know why anybody would want this guy back in the tent. He is really not to be trusted. And frankly, stealing $1 million, which is what the indictment accuses him of, is far more serious than the charges fabricated and brought against me of lying to Congress when I meant any misstatement I meant was immaterial. And I had no intent to mislead anyone because there was nothing to mislead them about. So it is karma. But just the same, I will be praying for it.
Now, Trump just gave a speech. He's still going. But 30 minutes ago, he came out and he said, you've seen the first indictment of this FBI lawyer that on record falsified the Carter Page FBI field memos. They knew he was CIA. That's why when he testifies at Congress, they say, what were you doing in Russia? It's classified. He'll be arrested if he said that, violating the National Security Act. And then they continue to act like he's hiding something when they knew damn well he works for the U.S. government as a patriot. And now they are really getting scared, and Trump has telegraphed that there are a bunch of indictments and we may actually see Durham take action. I know I talked to Steve Pachinik, who has big Pentagon and CIA connections and is one of the most accurate guys I know. And he said he's surprised that Trump actually did this or could get Barr to do this. But the word is they're going to move against the deep state before the election. That's what we're hearing now. What do you think of that statement, if that's accurate?
Well, first of all, Steve Pachinik is a very credible source, and he has his own sources. As a veteran of the counterintelligence establishment, he knows a lot, but he's a truth teller. At the same time, my fear is that we scapegoat Kleinsmith without ever finding out who instructed Kleinsmith to do this, who above him. It's not incidental that Andrew Weissman, the so-called pit bull of the Mueller investigation, actively urging Department of Justice employees not to cooperate with any of these investigations. I believe that's obstruction of justice, has falsely accused me of hiding misconduct by the president.
Let's talk about the new Senate committee stuff we're hearing where they're saying that, you know, they have intel you were a Russian, which, like, WMDs in Iraq. Roger Stone, straight ahead. Stay with us. Roger, this is bigger than your case, and I care about you. And when you said 3 years ago when they were setting you up, you were worried. 2 years ago, I thought you were exaggerating. Then they tried to get me indicted and my dad indicted. And I learned, wow, this is real. And so I apologize. You were right. But it is bigger than you. It's about all of us, about them saying that we didn't vote for Trump. Russia did it. They're back at it again in the Senate with no evidence saying you're a Russian agent, recycling that. So nip that in the bud for us.
Yeah, the Senate Intelligence Committee report was released on Friday, and it is the same fabricated recycling of the same old nonsense. Interestingly enough, it says that in this report that they assessed that Roger Stone spoke multiple times with Donald Trump regarding the release of the WikiLeaks disclosures. Assessed is always a word that the intelligence agencies use when they have a theory that they have no evidence or proof for. This is categorically false, but it is designed to bolster the false claim, the big lie, that Roger Stone traded his silence regarding misconduct by the president and conversations that were inappropriate in return for clemency in his case. There is no evidence of that whatsoever. You have the uncorroborated plea bargain induced testimony of Michael Cohen and Rick Gates, which they cannot prove because it is false. They both made a deal to get reduced sentences in return for those lies. By the way, I passed two polygraph tests on this exact question. So it also says in the report, for example, Alex, that in July of 2016, I wrote a tweet for Donald Trump, candidate Trump, at his direction, proposing some peace plan with Vladimir Putin. This is whole cloth. I wrote no tweets for candidate Trump whatsoever in 2016, including this one. Where does this information come from? When you look at the leadership of this committee, it is the disgraced Richard Burr, who got caught insider trading.
And it comes out of the rear end of Adam Schiff.
And that pustule from Virginia, Mark Warner. These guys, so you have rhinos and hardline leftist Democrats trying to recycle the same.
Exactly. I know you're talking about the Senate, but I mean, going back to the House, Schiff is still a central character they want us to forget about. Isn't he quarterbacking a lot of this?
Well, thank God the Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee were not rhinos, at least not all of them, and they were more aggressive. And I think Chairman Nunes came to the correct conclusion. There was no evidence of Russian collusion with the Trump campaign. This document that they released last week implies that there is, but there's no proof to it. It is a false narrative. Warner continues to imply that I had something to do with the timing of the WikiLeaks disclosures, for which there is no evidence at all.
Well, I've seen the Democrats in general, Roger. They're running ads and stuff about Russiagate again. They think we're that stupid. I think this is a losing issue. I think America has rejected it, but they're such an alien force wanting to get rid of the country itself. They have to brand us as the outside pathogen because they're the ones on the Chi-Com dole. And I really like to see Trump running big ads showing how Joe Biden's bought and paid for by a foreign power. I mean, this is ridiculous.
I agree. I think that is one of Biden's several greatest vulnerabilities. If you watched that snooze fest last night, the Democratic National Convention, this idea that the president bungled the coronavirus crisis is completely false. This idea that that hydrochloroquine and zinc don't work, that's false also. The president had the audacity to point to an inexpensive medication, which there's now more than enough medical evidence.
Yeah, something that actually works at 99% because he wants to fix it instead of create a problem and milk it for 100 years.
And he doesn't want the pharmaceutical companies to cash in on what is a legitimate but probably overstated public health crisis.
I totally agree. We only got 5 minutes left with you. You're a busy man. People need to support you. They need to get your Roger Stone still did nothing wrong because you're a signet, a standard of victory against their evil at your main website. And we'll get that out in a moment. But I've been asking the questions today. What other stuff's on your radar you want to tell people about?
Well, obviously, the Republican National Convention is coming up, and the president and his people are working very hard to have a superior presentation. These conventions do impact the voters' attitudes. The president has been gaining in the polls. He is closing the gap. That gap is caused, quite frankly, by the collapse of the economy because of the measures the president had no choice but to take to protect the country in the COVID-19 crisis, and because of the relentless falsehoods coming from the mainstream media. At the same time, you have the widespread and increasing censorship of patriots, liberals, Republicans, conservatives, non-liberals, Trump supporters, Christians on the internet. This combined factor is why the president is, I think, slightly behind in this contest. But Alex, I have seen no poll that shows that the president cannot recover. He's not behind.
No, I agree. I just heard a train wreck sound because I really respect you because you're an optimist. You're saying Trump's behind right now. I heard a record skip there. Let's start over with that because that makes me have a little bit of a pucker factor here.
I think he is slightly behind probably nationally and in probably more than half of the swing states, but that doesn't concern me. He was behind at this point in 2016 as well.
Sure, so they're going to pull the shenanigan on the post office next week to overshadow the convention.
They will try to. Look, they will try to distract to the extent that they can. The president can win this contest. I think he will win this contest. He needs a more focused approach in the fall, which I think you'll see. But again, I am not one of those country club Republicans running for the high grass. I think he's slightly behind today. I explained why, but I think he can make up that ground.
By the way, you said exactly this 4 years ago, but in studio with us.
That's exactly right. Look, institutionally, the combination of the internet censorship and the mainstream media added to the ballot fraud that we expect is what's going to make this a very difficult race. There's nothing new here. If you didn't have those factors, if you had an honest election, Donald Trump would run away with this. But any Republican or any Trump supporter who is sitting back thinking that this will be a landslide because the silent majority is going to pull it out, overconfidence is one of our most egregious problems. I still find pockets of overconfidence among the president's supporters.
I keep running into it as well. Sean Hannity, I like Sean Hannity. I think the sheltered thing about how he hates the president, they're trying to drive a wedge between Hannity and Trump. I think that's BS gut level. What do you think?
I love Sean Hannity. He was very good to me in my epic fight for freedom. I know that he has great affection for the president. He's expressed it to me. I've never heard him say anything of the kind.
So that's just another attempted wedge operation.
Yeah, Brian Stelter's not a credible source. And we don't name whoever supposedly said this. I happen to know that Sean Hannity has great affection and respect for the president. He's told me that numerous times. Why would he say otherwise?
He might have said the president's crazy like a fox. He didn't say he's crazy.
Absolutely not. It's just disinformation. It's a yet another smear attempt. Remember, I don't believe anything CNN says. I don't get my news from CNN for the same reason I don't eat out of the
food. No, I agree, but they still try to stay relevant by just saying whopper lies. And like even I have trouble sometimes just wanting to know. Roger, amazing, very exciting what's going on. And we're just glad that you are not in prison, and they are certainly pissed about that. Have a great weekend, my friend.
So I'm now back at StoneColdTruth.com, posting regularly on the latest political news. So folks who saw our hiatus during the gag can go back to StoneColdTruth.com and follow my political analysis there. Many thanks.
Thank you, Roger.
Next is Kaitlyn's Bennett's report about Millie Weaver. Here we go next. Just a short clip.
This video you're about to watch is going to be much different than anything else I've ever filmed. I'm very concerned for my friend, Millie Weaver, and I think she's surrounding herself with some really bad influences. I want you guys to understand that this video is coming from a place of love and concern for someone I have spent a lot of time around, someone whose newborn baby I've held, and someone I once considered a close friend. But within the last year, she surrounded herself with some very questionable people, which has caused her to turn her back on and lie about everyone that she used to work with or consider a friend. I've spent time around Millie's family, and I think that they're great people. But Millie has unfortunately befriended very sketchy characters that I believe put Millie and her family in danger because some of them are even married to child rapists. That's why I'm making this video for you guys, because a lot of things are going to change, and it's important to get the truth out there before they put out more lies about everybody else. All of you are probably aware by now, Millie was arrested this past weekend at her home in Ohio. She recorded a 1-minute live stream to her Facebook where she looked like she had no clue why she was being arrested and suggested it was because she was about to release a documentary.
As I'm literally about to break huge breaking news right now, and I'm being arrested and I have no idea why.
Now before I get into the arrest, I want to talk to you guys about that documentary. It's a film called Shadowgate, and conservatives have been blowing up this documentary because they think she was arrested over it. But what the people sharing this documentary don't know is that it has some very interesting people listed as whistleblowers. And these whistleblowers don't just think Barack Obama and the Democrats are running a shadow government, but they think many of the right-wingers you look up to and love, such as Roger Stone, Jack Posobiec, Mike Cernovich, Dan Bongino, Matt Gaetz, Judge Jeanine, and even myself, are all deep state federal agents. And for the record, I am just a YouTuber. I'm not a federal agent, and if I were, I'd be doing a pretty bad job at it. So before believing anyone in Millie's documentary and sharing it around as if it's fact, it would probably be important to find out who Millie interviewed to establish their credibility. So who are the whistleblowers in Millie's documentary? The first one is a guy named Patrick Berge, who claims to be a cybersecurity specialist that worked for General James Jones.
Alex Jones. The biggest fucking conspiracy theorist on the planet doesn't see this as an issue. Well, he's fucking as dirty as I thought he was. Galvin and Millie assured me that he wasn't. But he was a straight-up guy. We were concerned about people possibly around him.
Patrick makes a lot of bold claims in the documentary and tries connecting a lot of dots. But the dots he connects outside the film are pretty eyebrow-raising. Let me show you some of his tweets just from the last few weeks. Just last week, Berge was calling OAN host Jack Posobiec a deep state agent that was funded by the feds to post memes. Berge tweeted, quote, "Shame you didn't ask who was funding your IIA meme project in 2016. You may think what you're doing is unique or somehow helpful, but it's not. You're destroying America's election integrity, literally the core of our democracy that so many died to protect." That same day, Berge shared someone else's tweet about Jack, which said, quote, "This guy is an IIA asset. Don't look to him to be on the right side of history." His dislike for Jack doesn't just end there. He also tweeted, quote, "Poso is in CYA mode because he's an effing IIA asset. These people make me puke." He then started calling Mike Cernovich a deep state agent. Berge tweeted, quote, "Posobiec should ask Cernovich if his IIA handlers contacted him before he publicly blackmailed Trump to protect Bannon from being fired. Or did they reach out after? My money was on after. Pretty sure that wasn't approved by the Navy PAO. I mean Poso, LOL. Not the tightest run, IIA guys." He also accused Roger Stone of being a deep state agent. Yeah, the same Roger Stone that was arrested over Russiagate and had to be pardoned by President Trump himself. Berge wrote, quote, "I'm pretty sure I saw Roger Stone in this trailer with a bunch of bad guys playing an IIA game on us. Stone is going on InfoWars with Alex Jones in a few minutes. I wonder if it will come up? All I want is the truth." In another tweet about Stone, he wrote, quote, "Roger Stone is a lying sack of shit. Dems weaponize his morally bankrupt past against Trump. Question, will Alex Jones ask Stone about ShadowNet? I don't think Alex knows Stone was General Jones' partner when ShadowNet was made public." He's also taken shots at Matt Gaetz, Devin Nunes, and Judge Jeanine, tweeting, quote, "Sure is a big coincidence, a freshman congressman getting seat on Judiciary. Same committee Devin Nunes is on. Nunes has known since December 2018, February 2019, when my congressman and Judge Jeanine spoke with him. Are they protecting Obama's NSA because they used ShadowNet themselves to win?" He has also tweeted, quote, "Why did Representative Matt Gaetz and the rest of them protect Obama's national security advisor? What slash whom are they afraid of?" Patrick Berge also really doesn't like Dan Bongino for some reason, and on his website, he's written, quote, "I couldn't give a rat's rear end about Dan Bongino. He's a former Secret Service agent assigned to protect President Obama, and he's still doing his job, protecting Obama and his former national security advisor." The crazy thing is that these are just tweets that Patrick's written over the last few weeks. If you want to scroll back even further, his tweets are pretty wonky. But what's even wonkier is Millie's other whistleblower in the film, a woman who calls herself Tori. Tori is someone who has publicly accused me of being a deep state agent and Antifa recruiter, which is ironic because Tori has also shared defamatory articles about me from actual Antifa sources that call me a Nazi and call for me to be physically hurt. Here are a couple of tweets that Tori wrote before her old Twitter account got banned. Quote, "Is at KateMarieOX the recruiter for Antifa within the conservative ranks? Is she pushing to radicalize conservatives?" She also wrote, quote, "Is Liberty Hangout using leftist tools taking things out of context? Sound like people are showing their real agenda. Pro-Trump? Think again. Liberty Hangout is a demonstration of IIA. At KateMarieOX is trying to radicalize conservatives." Then Millie Weaver herself unfortunately amplified Tory's conspiracy that I'm a government agent by saying, quote, IIA, and posting pictures of government documents. Tori claims she was a private contractor for intelligence agencies, but she couldn't tell USA Today who she worked for because, quote, the names of the companies would change often.